Welcome, everyone, to the AI in Business podcast. I'm Matthew DeMello, senior editor here at Emerge Technology Research. Today's guest is Shane Bray, chief customer experience officer at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Louisiana. Shane joins me on the program today to discuss how the convergence of healthcare and financial services presents a compelling opportunity for the integration of AI to elevate patient experiences and customer interactions in insurance workflows. Later, we take a closer look at the advantages of generative AI in addressing problems like the interoperability of different healthcare IT systems and giving caretakers a deeper understanding of patient behaviors and sentiment analysis. Today's episode is sponsored by Unifor, and without further ado, here's our conversation. Shane, thanks so much for being with us on the program this week.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Matthew. Thanks for the invite.
This is a really great opportunity for us. I know we've been talking about FinServ customer experience workflows and healthcare patient experience workflows separately on the podcast up until this point. We've got a grand opportunity to talk about them together to a certain extent, especially for the healthcare insurance space. In that way, I want to just kind of set the table in terms of maybe how to think about the challenges too, even in this space where, you know, they're the same person, even if they're going to have two different kinds of experiences across two different workflows. What do you see as the biggest challenges right now in customer service workflows in healthcare, particularly healthcare insurance?
Well, I think when you think about customer experience, both outside of healthcare and within healthcare, and then within healthcare, it becomes a couple different things. It becomes member experience when they're dealing with their health insurance provider or payer. It becomes patient experience when they're actually dealing with the hospitals and the doctors. So there's a lot of different types of experiences. And outside of the healthcare system, people are looking for things that are easy, that are convenient. In a lot of ways, they're looking for something that they really want to be consumers of. So they have some expectations of what they want to happen. Often in customer experience within healthcare, a lot of times you don't want to be there and you don't want to be a consumer of the services that you're buying. It's something that happens to you and now you have to be a consumer of these services. So it is a completely different world in terms of patient and member experience is something that you don't have a lot of control over. You get sick, so one of your loved ones gets sick, you have to navigate a system that's extremely difficult, has unknown costs and expenses versus the other customer experiences where you know what to expect, you're excited about the product, and oftentimes based on what you can't afford or what experiences you're looking for, you have a lot of control over the experience. And so there's just a lot of differences between the healthcare space and the commercial space in general.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think you're putting a fine point just based on the very essence of where they're entering the workflow involuntarily. And right. We know across, especially insurance, you know, oh, there's emotional obstacles to work around. There's different kinds of impacts that are going to have on sentiment, particularly whether or not the customer in question chooses to be there. I know this is particularly poignant for collections workflows. Just in terms of streamlining healthcare workflows, particularly when it comes to the clinic and the pharmacy and the payer, where are we seeing in terms of like streamlining those processes where the rubber hits the road that there are the biggest frictions for the patient staying in patient experience?
Well, when you think about a healthcare experience, let's say you have a COVID diagnosis, right? And it's not a severe case of COVID. You have flu-like symptoms. Maybe you don't go into the office. Maybe it's a telehealth visit. Talk to your doctor for a few minutes. He confirms your symptoms. Maybe he prescribes Paxlovid, and then you recuperate at home. And so even with something like a not severe COVID diagnosis, it's not so bad. But the sicker you get, the more complex those workflows get. Now let's think about someone who has just maybe found a lump in their breast. And so they notice a lump in their breast and they go see their primary care physician. The primary care physician takes a look at it, realizes it's probably something that needs some diagnostics. So they send them for imaging. So now you're no longer within the context of your provider's office. Now it's off to imaging to do some unknown tests, and then imaging, maybe they find something. So they send you back to your primary care provider. Then maybe they send you to, in this case, they would send you to a specialist. Specialist does a few more tests, does a few more things, and then maybe they need to send you to another specialist, which happens often. So the the complexity determines the complexity of the navigation. And oftentimes when it's something simple, it's not so bad. You can take a few knocks and you can take a few inconveniences because you're going to be better in 3 to 7 days. But when it gets to the point where you have a real illness or a chronic illness, that navigation becomes a real problem because a lot of times the providers themselves don't understand it. They understand their domain and they know kind of where you need to go next. But there's the navigation piece of patient experience gets more and more complex the more and more sick you get. So it's a bit of an inverse relationship of the sicker you are, the harder it gets. And it makes it very difficult for all sorts of aspects, financial, physical, mental. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I know from the conversations we've had elsewhere in the healthcare space, obviously healthcare systems are aspiring to make sure that, you know, they're completely focused on the patient. And even just given the regulatory burden in the healthcare system, there ends up being different priorities. Just as an example, when the ACA was passed a little over 10 years ago, it was written in such a way, and HIPAA, I know this, it's written in this way as well. It prioritizes EHR data for the ends of payment, not for the ends of care. And I know that that ends up in huge frictions for the patient experience in how they interact with the healthcare system, especially for that dynamic you were just mentioning as the more they get sick, the more lost they tend to get in these systems. In terms of balancing what has to be important to the healthcare system from a regulatory standpoint, from a tech debt burden standpoint, versus what's important to the patient, their own care. How are we closing that gap? Or what is, maybe even taking a step back from there, what does that gap look like that we need to close?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. And we could probably spend a lot of time on that one. Sure. So if you look at, I mean, talking about the ACA, what did the ACA do? They didn't, to your point, necessarily dictate the outcomes. They dictated what a QHP or a quality health plan needs to cover. So they said that this plan needs to cover these things. It covers those things. Great. But, you know, at that point, that there's no focus necessarily on quality or outcomes. It's just saying that, hey, your insurance has to pay for this. Then the hospitals have different metrics. You know, they're looking at admissions, discharges, open beds, how many people they can put in their OR, number of patients they can move through. So the hospitals are very much looking at it like a business, which they should do because they are a business. But when that happens, it's really easy to lose focus of what business they're in. And I think that business is really the human experience business, taking care of the sick, the ill. And then when we start to look at the things that we are measuring, let's say readmissions and infection rates, those things are really, really important. But what the patients are thinking about is they're thinking about, am I getting the right treatment? Do I have the right opinion? What's the delays in diagnostic? You know, sometimes it's a day or two. And again, in the example of COVID, sometimes it's weeks. What are my diagnostic delays going to look like? What is my diagnostic accuracy going to look like? We don't measure those types of things today. We don't look at things that our patients are thinking about in terms of, am I going to be okay? And am I going to live through this? And am I paying for things that I don't need? And then I think one of the other things that is a big gap is that hospitals and health systems tend to treat individuals as a group. You know, they look at the group metrics and associate things as big chunks of people and big chunks of data versus being treated really as an individual. And yes, that's difficult. But in terms of the things that we want to improve, we really have to look at the individual aspect of it, because when it comes down to it, it is very personalized. It is very individualistic. And not every cancer case is the same. Not every COVID case is the same. So treating patients as groups or as case studies or things that are backed by significant studies, while sometimes effective, really takes the individualism, I think, out of it. But I guess to sum all that up, we need to look at things that are important to the patient and versus what's important to the health system itself.
Yes. I also remember from our initial calls, just setting up this conversation, prior authorizations are a major pain for members and providers as well. And I know this is at least meant to facilitate, at least as you know, a practice, it's meant to facilitate the process. What's the pain point here and how is it bogging down the patient experience?
Prior authorizations, you know, there is a need for those processes sometimes, because, you know, oftentimes things are misdiagnosed, things are mistreated. There does need to be, I believe, some oversight in terms of the payers and some entity looking at the appropriateness of care. But then when it comes down to it, and I think this is a fantastic application of AI in the future, is what's the accuracy of the physician who is requesting said treatment? How often does it happen? How often is it effective and really applicable? But the issue that I have with prior authorizations is it not only causes major pain for the patients, is it causes a major pain for others. And now we have two of the major consumer groups, or the two of the major actors in the scenario, are both feeling a major pain point from something that is imposed typically by the payer to ensure that costs are controlled. There is a lot of, I think there certainly is an argument for the necessity of prior authorizations, but it requires back office staff. It requires a lot of administrative work. How much money are we spending on those types of things versus just the treatments themselves and enabling physicians to do their jobs? So I think a lot of the controls we put in place tend to add a significant amount of overhead, a significant amount of pain. Prior authorizations is one that's just got under my skin lately because of the significant pain that it causes to multiple players within the ecosystem.
Yes, and we're always here for the latest in terms of where the problems are popping up in these workflows. Just in terms of, you were mentioning AI a second ago, and I think it's very well established. I know we have a few episodes in this regard talking about, you know, the application, particularly of new generative AI tools to help with tech debt, to help with administrative tasks. I think that's out there. Also, I know we were talking about this in our outlines in discussions. It seems as though that the more that healthcare leaders are leveraging data tools, the more pharmacies and retail pharmacies seem to elevate in importance as kind of like the ground floor where, you know, kind of the needle is moving in terms of improving patient experiences. How, in your view, can customer experience, healthcare, and insurance leaders leverage data tools to solve these problems? And what's that looking like on the ground?
Yeah, and you know, I think the answer really to most of those entities is really the interoperability of the data and transparency in that data. When we think about efficient drug treatments, patient goes and sees the physician writes a prescription, has no idea if the patient can even afford the prescription. He just knows that it's effective for the condition that he's decided that day that you have. Then there's the role of the pharmacy in there receiving the prescription. How is it being paid for? The patient's wondering how they're going to pay for it. But it's a very, I think, complex system that stands for a lot of improvement. You know, what if the physicians right up front knew the cost of the medication and asked the patient, hey, can you afford this? And if they can't, then let's address that right up front. Let's not even make it to the pharmacy before you figure out your surprise price and know what your copayment is going to be or what the cost of the medication is going to be. I think that one of the issues that we're seeing today is not necessarily people not wanting to consume healthcare, but not being able to afford to consume healthcare and having that transparency up front because of the interoperability of the data that allows them to see if that treatment is at all sustainable for them financially or at all feasible. So I think if we had better data interoperability, one that powers AI, because AI is just a consumer of data that that looks at trends and synthesizes new concepts based on data.
Let me ask you a question right there, in terms of you know, where the affordability problem, just being able to get you know, those concerns up front, maybe be a little bit more proactive in the process. I know also that a lot of what we talk about in terms of AI and leveraging data solutions is envisioning a future where we're being more proactive or preventative about care rather than reactive. And I think even in the payments process, I think there are huge opportunities there, as you're just mentioning, in terms of, you know, knowing beforehand what patients can afford before they walk walk into the room before they're in front of doctors to explain what they need. Where do you see the gap there, just in terms of how far we have to go in order to really make those systems intuitive and then get to the point where we're being a lot more proactive about patients being where they belong in the system and in receiving care that they know that they can't afford?
You know, I've actually thought about this quite a bit in the past few weeks, and it's kind of stirred up some new thoughts that I have, is that I think that there's a lot of hope around AI and how it can improve proactive and preventative treatments and illness. And I think that there certainly is a great opportunity there. However, I think that it might be a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Over-optimistic, because I think that a lot of times the outcomes are dependent not necessarily on not being proactive, but behavioral issues that are innate in patients. So in some cases, I think that patients will respond to proactive and proactive prompts that say, hey, maybe it's time to go get that mammogram. Maybe it's time to get that colonoscopy, have your blood pressure checked, keep your sugar in check. But then there's also the behavioral issues that I think we're seeing more and more problems with diabetes, the escalation in obesity. There, you can't be proactive enough in some of those cases, but it all comes down to behavioral changes mm-hmm. that are necessary in the patient population for any of that to be effective. So I think where there's a lot of hope around AI having this proactive approach and patients really wanting to consume that and go about it, yeah, some people are going to do that. But I think the issue that we're going to have with AI is that the optimism will probably die down a little bit when we find out we can't really change the behaviors. And that's, I think, what we're going to need to do is figure out how we modify behavior versus modify technology.
Roger. And I mean, especially here at Emerge, we take a very discerning look at hype cycles with artificial intelligence. And these are funny things, especially in the world of generative AI, where, yeah, a lot of it is very much hyped. All at the same time, you know, the capabilities of AI that are concrete and in many cases very seldom known are not publicized enough about or are surprising to the point where I think we're still contradicting things we were told in elementary school, that robots would never make art and things like that, or could ever be creative. And I think anybody who's even seen, 2 seconds of a Dolly demonstration knows that that's really not the case going forward. All that said, just in terms of, you know, what we previously thought artificial systems could never do, we know from collections use cases that artificial intelligence is actually uniquely equipped to understand sentiment and be able to really assist other human beings and call agents, especially with rapport and bedside manner, especially when they're guiding customers and patients in this case through very, very difficult circumstances. Just with respect to your point right there about behaviors and diabetes and obesity, I'm wondering and understand just from the perspective of, you know, seeing we're still waiting to see where AI can take us, but if we're able to take better data on sentiment analysis about how patients are talking about those challenges, what the behaviors are, that maybe we can analyze them in a way that at least can bring a data approach to what actually improves patient outcomes in terms of how to talk to them about their behaviors and assist caretakers and providers with bedside manner, with being more persuasive about changing those behaviors. Do you see those capabilities at all, or do you see them as overhyped?
No, you know, actually, I think in that context, I think that there is significant opportunity, particularly in the development of human relations, or at least the perception of those human relations, because as you mentioned, sentiment, tonality, all of those things, AI is innately good at, because it's looked at our language patterns over forever, and it knows that to have a sympathetic response, these are the types of things that a person, that an empathetic person would say, and AI does a really good job of replicating that. And I think the interesting piece there is that when people will not respond to data, they very often will respond to relationships. And I think that that's where it's going to be important, is not so much giving them the data and saying, hey, if you don't do this, then this will probably happen, because we have the data and we have the case studies and we have the metrics, and we can show that if your weight is out of control, then your percentage for type 2 goes up, and then hypertension, all of those things follow. But then going back to the replicating human responses and human emotions, it doesn't necessarily, in my opinion, have to be a human that is eliciting those things for people to have a response. I think when AI gets to the point, and it's very close, I think, right now with the generative AI capabilities, that focuses less on the data aspects of it and more about building those relationships with patients, that's where I think we're going to see behavioral change, because people are going to have those internal feelings of, I feel safe. I feel like this, I can trust this. I feel like it cares for me. And even if it's a machine, you know, it's people will respond to building those relationships. So I think that the human aspects of AI can be extremely powerful in helping to modify behaviors that right now care management teams are just overstressed on. But I think that there's a lot of application, a lot of promise there.
Yes, and no shortage of use cases across industries for relationship management, especially where we can collect data and have a very, very strong sense of where it's on the ground changing behaviors. Really radical stuff. Shane, thank you so much for being on the show this week. It's been an absolute blast.
You bet. Enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
Before we wrap up today's episode, some talking points Shane had discussed that I think should leave a lasting impression on our executive listening audience. They include that Shane began his episode by emphasizing that streamlining clinic, pharmacy, and payer workflows is crucial for improving patient experiences, as these are the areas where friction tends to occur. He also notes that the sicker the patient is, the more complex the navigation becomes, citing examples of patients with chronic illnesses facing challenges in accessing proper care. Concerning the gap between healthcare system priorities and patient-centered care, Shane highlights the importance of prioritizing the latter over the former, focusing on individual experiences and concerns over group metrics. He also notes that prior authorizations add overhead and administrative work, but AI tools can help with tech debt and administrative tasks. Better data interoperability powers AI, which synthesizes new concepts based on trends, accessing affordability and feasibility issues for patients. Shane also raises concerns about AI's ability to change patient behaviors, citing examples of diabetes and obesity. Towards the end of the show, we discussed modifying behaviors through sentiment analysis and bedside manner in healthcare. Shane concludes by citing the importance of relationship management in various industries and the potential for AI to collect data to change behaviors. On behalf of Daniel Fajella, our CEO and head of research, as well as the rest of the team here at Emerge Technology Research, thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll catch you next time on the AI in Business podcast.